800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Peter Ferreira. And Peter, thank you so very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us, our listeners, just a little bit about your background? And I know you've been looking into Social Security, Medicare, things like that for a long time. What's the organization you're with? And, of course, why is this so vitally important today?
Well, you know, I've been involved in conservative, free market, public policy for OSC going back to the Reagan years. Actually, I've really been involved in it since high school.
Because I've heard your name many, many times through the years.
Yes, arguing the case for these causes for a long time. One of the groups I work with now, I work with several groups, so one of them is the American Civil Rights Union. And one of the issues we're focused on is the Fairness Doctrine issues and the threat to freedom of speech on conservative talk radio and on Christian radio stations. And this is exactly the kind of issue that we fight for.
All right, fine. Well, I think that's vitally important that people understand that freedom is under attack. They really do want to limit what we say on the internet, on the radio, because they don't want the American people to know the truth. In fact, this is the old fairness doctrine they're trying to reinstall now, isn't it? Where you would have hear only the liberal side and never the conservative side of the issues discussed?
Yeah. You know, if you look back and read through history, you'll see in the Revolutionary's playbook, the strategy is to first seize all the radio stations and all the TV stations and announce that you are the new government. And basically, this is what the liberals have already done in America. They've seized all the media outlets, and they've announced that they are, you know, the only acceptable view, and anybody doesn't agree with them on any big issues is a misfit, as we saw, for example, in the case of Miss California, for example, recently. There's just a few couple of holdouts, and that's conservative talk radio and Christian radio stations. So they want to go after them next. You know, if you look at the media, you never hear any conservative views on ABC, CBS, NBC. You don't hear them, see them in the New York Times or the LA Times or the rest of the liberal newspapers. You don't see them in Time or Newsweek.
Well, but of course, you have some people out there who profess to be conservative and talk a good line, but they avoid the real issue. Certainly, we give Pat Buchanan gets a fair play, and most of what he says is true. It's what he doesn't say that you know, it's important. It's the same thing with Rush Limbaugh. Gives you the conservative line, but avoids the real issues.
Yeah, we have, you know, there are some conservative columnists. And there's conservative talk radio, and then there's Christian radio. And, you know, the ones that reach the most people are the radio stations. And also, if you have Fox News that dares to put any conservatives on, you know, all they do on Fox News is put on a conservative to match up with a liberal. If you watch the shows carefully, there's always a liberal and a conservative. But that's not good enough for the left. They want to shut down any conservative view. And even among conservatives, as you mentioned, there's a lot of disagreements as well in different sides. But, you know, part of their doctrine, you know, there's nothing liberal about the liberals anymore. So on free speech, they don't believe in freedom of speech. You've seen this on the college campuses for many years now, where they try to shut down any conservative speakers or any people with alternative views to the liberal left party line. And they're expanding this now to the rest of the media, where they want to be intolerant of any other views and just have a monopoly of thought and control to impose their views and their values on everyone.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with you at all, Peter. The question is, are they going to be able to bring this in? Now, we've heard recently that a lot of the pressure for return of something similar to the Fairness Doctrine seems to have been abated. Is that true, or are they simply trying to put us to sleep? And hang on to that thought, because we'll be back here in just a moment with Peter Ferraro. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We're talking today to Peter Ferrar, who is with an organization that sounds very much like the American Civil Liberty Union, but it's the American Civil Rights Union. I think they do that to confuse people, but the American Civil Rights Union is nothing like the ACLU, which, of course, is a medium of the radical left and, of course, ostensibly wants to maintain freedom of speech, and yet, of course, they really don't want to maintain freedom of speech, but there is an organized effort to bring back what was apparent before during the Carter administration and really for a long period of time before that, called the Fairness Doctrine. Now, who could be against the Fairness Doctrine except the fact that it wasn't fair? It was aimed at silencing conservative voices and allowing the liberals to go on. And there was an organized effort. If you had any conservative voice, like Dean Mannion in those days and Carl McIntyre and Dan Smoot, why, the stations would just be plagued with demands for equal time. We have to have equal time. But when you went to the stations and said, I wanted equal time for the liberal views, why, they'd say, why, we never said that. Or you could not get any satisfaction. It wasn't equal. It wasn't fair. It was an effort at censorship. Would you... with us is Peter Ferrara. Certainly, would that be an accurate appraisal, Peter?
Yeah, you know, the Fairness Doctrine was in the law for many years, and it basically shut down freedom of speech. It was bureaucrats basically arbitrarily deciding what the other side, opposite side is of the issues, as if there's only two sides, you know, on any of these issues. Any issue you pick, I could probably think of half a dozen different positions. One of the big tricks they had in the original Fairness Doctrine is they said, well, it doesn't apply to news broadcasts because that's just objective news. So ABC and CBS and NBC could be as biased as they want on their evening news broadcast. There was no control over that. But if you try to have a talk show on a radio station, then you were subject to bureaucrats coming in and saying, well, you need to allow the other side, or you need to offer free time to the other side. And most radio stations just avoided this political talk format altogether because they didn't want to be subject to giving away free time, putting people on the air that the audience didn't want to listen to, losing control, or whether they had shows that really had ratings appeal. So you basically shut down freedom of speech on political talk on the radio during those years. In 1987, Reagan repealed the Fairness Doctrine, and the result was an explosion of conservative talk radio. Led by Rush Limbaugh, was the first to have a really...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Peter was just saying that during the Reagan years, they repealed the Fairness Doctrine, and then you had an explosion of conservative talk radio, really led initially by Rush Limbaugh, who talks a wonderful conservative line. But, of course, on the major issues going along, he's always with the Republicans. Doesn't matter whether they're right or wrong, he's always with them. And the Democrats are always bad, and the Republicans and the conservatives are always right. And yet sometimes, why, the conservatives have taken the wrong position, but that doesn't matter to Rush Limbaugh. He's the voice of conservative, and he's the voice of the Republican Party no matter what they do. And I think that, of course, to many, many objective people, we have to say, look, We're interested in truth, not simply doctrinaire, following party A or party B, because sometimes they're both going the same direction. But you pick up the story there, Peter.
Well, so what they did and what Reagan did basically is replace the so-called fairness doctrine, which really wasn't based on fairness at all because bureaucrats in the government don't know what's fair and what's not, replace the fairness doctrine with the free speech doctrine. And so you have, today you have thousands of radio stations across the country in political talk radio. You have thousands and thousands of talk radio programs. And you have predominantly conservative talk radio shows. But you also have several shows of liberals who will also sometimes succeed. They don't do as well as conservatives, I think, because this is the only outlet for conservative views. And so, if people turn to conservative talk radio to actually get the other side from what they hear from the major media, which behaves today like a party-controlled press. And you've got, in addition to, you have over 800 stations from that NPR, National Public Radio. Those all tend to be liberal, left-wing, Barack Obama party line institutions all the time, financed, by the way, by the taxpayers. Then you've got all these alternatives on the Internet. You have broadcasts on the Internet now. You have thousands and thousands of websites. You have now satellite radio. You have cable TV, you have regular TV, you have newspapers across the country, and lots of different views among the columnists. So it's not like the liberal view is not represented in America. Quite to the contrary, you can barely get away from it wherever you go. And they want to shut down, the couple of remaining outlets for conservative viewpoints because, the liberals really aren't liberal anymore today. Really, they are power mongers, and you see this across the board. We can talk about issue after issue where the real motivation is not anything that we call liberalism. The real motivation is more and more political power, and so you see that here as well. They want to shut down the competing views to maximize their own political power.
So what is the real threat? Do you think they're going to be able to bring back the fairness doctrine? I should say the unfairness doctrine. What can we do to circumvent it? Certainly, Obama pretends that he wants all sides to be heard. He talks about we should rethink abortion, but of course he's in favor of even killing children after they've been actively born, and they're completely born, but they still can be killed if mother wants them killed. I mean, the most radical United States Senator is now the President of the United States. And yet he says, of course, he wants us to think about all sides. Do you think he really wants fair, or do you think he has an agenda that is that of the radical left, which is all power to the government and destroy anybody? We know, for instance, that the people who ran the hedge funds and the pension funds who were invested in Chrysler have said that they were threatened. They had threats to their life. They got calls from the White House threatening to destroy them if they objected to the Chrysler settlement, where they would lose two-thirds of the money they invested. Do you really think that the Obama administration is interested in fairness and openness, or do you think they're going to use threats and intimidation to silence the opposition, as they do in every authoritarian society?
Well, if I may be truthful rather than diplomatic, if you study Barack Obama, you'll see that he engages in a practice of actually calculated misdeception. Bill Clinton used to lie a lot, but that was when he got in trouble. He used to lie to get himself out of it. But with Barack Obama, he's got a practice of calculated deception to mislead you about exactly where he's going. So, for example, when he introduced his budget earlier this year, he had the biggest deficit in U.S. history, 7 times bigger than any deficit Reagan had, 4 times bigger than any deficit that George Bush had. It had bigger deficits over the next 10 years than all the prior U.S. presidents combined. He introduces it with all his zoring rhetoric about how he's going to cut the deficit in half in five years. Well, that's never going to happen, but at least he misled everybody or misdirected them away from what was really in his budget, which was enormous debt, enormous increase in government spending, also enormous increases in taxes. But again, he's misled people about that by talking about some little tax cut in one place, thereby misdirecting them from where everything else is going on. He's done the same thing on the fairness doctrine, where he's come out and said he's against the fairness doctrine. In fact, when Senator Jim DeMint from South Carolina introduced an amendment to prohibit the FCC from adopting the Fairness Doctrine, Obama gave the green light to all the Senate Democrats to go ahead and vote for his amendment, because we want to make people think that we're against the fairness doctrine. And so they did, and the amendment passed overwhelmingly. You see, the real trick here is that the fairness, this new regulation, this new attack on conservative talk radio and Christian radio, is not going to come from under the name the fairness doctrine, and it's not going to come through Congress. It's going to come by FCC regulation, where the FCC already has plenty of regulatory authority to, under different names, adopt what will be the same effect as the fairness doctrine. And where they're going to do this, the magic words they're going to use is the doctrine of localism. If you go back to the Federal Communications Act of 1934, it says that radio stations have to serve the needs and interests of the local community. Well, if you think about that, you know, that's what radio stations are all about. It's called ratings. If you put shows on that nobody's interested in, then you're not going to do very well, and you're going to go out of business. So they're all about, radio stations are all about putting shows on that, in fact, the local community is interested in, and that's the competition for ratings. And in fact, conservative talk radio, Christian radio shows get tremendous ratings all across the country. That's serving the needs and interests of the local community. But that's not what these political activists are talking about when they say localism. What they want to do is have local committees appointed that include all the local left-wing activists, ACLU, ACORN, Left-Handed Lesbians Against Strawberries, every one of these different groups, have them all represented. And then have them advise the radio station as to what it needs to do to actually serve the needs and interests of the local community. One of the things that they use, that the threats is that they'll say, well, these nationally syndicated talk shows, they don't serve the local community. They're addressing national issues. So Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, any of these popular national radio talk shows, well, that's not localism. And so really you should put us on your radio station and let us spout our views in place of them, because we're local people. And then if you don't accommodate their views, you run the risk at the license renewal time that they'll complain to the FCC. This station just puts on these nationally syndicated programs, and it's not serving localism. So take away their license and give it to somebody else who'll put us on. Or give the license to us, our committee, and we'll run the radio station. There's a lot of danger here that through the pressure from these kinds of committees, these local Soviet commissar councils, so to speak, they will intimidate radio stations into taking off the shows that people really want to listen to and shutting down the expression of conservative and Christian views and displacing them with liberal left views regardless of the ratings. And so that's where I think the threat's going to come. When Obama's appointees get confirmed by the Senate, appointees of the FCC, they'll have the majority 3-2, and they'll be able to adopt these regulations as they want. And so, you know, we'll be left, we'll have to sue under the First Amendment of the Constitution, as an infringement of freedom of speech, and fight it out in the courts.
Well, of course, when they had the Fairness Doctrine, they tried to fight it out in the courts, but the Supreme Court has been packed by people who actually went right along with the Fairness Doctrine. In fact, the famous case of the Red Lion, I think it was Paul McIntyre, or Carl McIntyre, trying to bring out he believed the real threat at that time was communism, and of course, they eventually ended up putting him off the air. He even went so far as to buy a ship and put it off the coast so that he could broadcast into the East Coast to let people know about the threat of communism and their influence in our government, and they went outside the boundaries of this country to shut down that radio station. So frightened were they of the fact that somebody might tell the American people the truth about what was going on, or at least as it was perceived at that time. So what can the American people do today? I mean, certainly, you know, we're going to have another almost 4 years of the Obama administration. The radical left is going to remain in control of our government for almost 4 years, and think of the harm that they can do to every aspect of our society during that time. Because these are people who don't believe in the Constitution. The Constitution limits the power of government. And yet, of course, they want to expand the power of government. They ignore the Constitution they've sworn to uphold. Their loyalty is not to America, but to a globalist, feudalistic scheme. What can the average individual out there do, Peter?
Yes, that's all true. And there's a grave threat. Not just in the area here of freedom of speech, but to the economy, to our national defense, to all kinds of critical areas. And so there's grave danger, and people have to wake up and get involved in their own political activism and get people to run for office, support good people who are running for office, and in addition to contacting their legislators, but don't just contact the legislatures, get organized locally, identify other conservatives, other people who agree with your views, and you know, most people are politically apathetic. So if you create a little local organization and there's only 20, 30 people in it, that's still a powerful group. Who else has got a group of 20, 30 people except the labor unions and some of these other left-wing activist groups? If you get active, you have a big impact. And then, you know, you can run for office yourself. You can raise money for good candidates. You can do all kinds of things. And look, you know, it's like Paul Revere in 1775 saying the British are coming. The country's under serious threat. This is no time to just ignore politics and deal with daily affairs.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Peter Ferrara right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Peter, how could we get people to be more concerned? I mean, after all, most people are more concerned with the whether the Lakers are going to get into the finals there at the NBA playoff, and you know who they're going to draft, you know, for the for the NFL, than they are about really the future of what's going on in America or who you know is elected to Congress. In fact, so they you look and see people run for Congress, and the same hacks get elected over and over again. Usually it was, I remember when I ran for Congress back in 1988, and I think there were only two or three of incumbent congressmen who were actually replaced. The regular congressmen get in over and over again, even though they do a terrible job, but the people locally love them because it's their congressman. He's not like all those other corrupt people. I think the support in Congress is, what, about 12% now? I mean, it was even lower. It was even lower than George Bush when he left office, which was about 20% of the people supported him. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, politics goes in cycles, and there's these great ways back and forth. And in the last election or two, a more conservative viewpoint, the more Republican viewpoint, was at a disadvantage. People, the Republicans had been in power for years, or at least they held office for years. The public turns from one party to the other. They don't just keep electing the same people. And then you had the special things like special economic problems. The tide is already turning, and it's turning back in the other direction.
But when the Republicans were in under George Bush, they were the biggest spenders. They went right along with George Bush, massive deficit spending, massive increase in government control. George Bush got through all the policies that Ted Kennedy couldn't get through, like, of course, the Medicare drug bill. Ted Kennedy couldn't get that through. The Republicans got it through for him. Ted Kennedy couldn't get through the No Child Left Behind policy. George Bush and the Republicans got it through. Does it really make a difference whether Republicans or the Democrats are in the White House?
I'm not saying to indiscriminately support one party or another. What people need to do is support the good candidates that are running that reflect their views. And within the Republican Party, you have some longtime establishment figures who don't represent the people anymore. You have other insurgents who are running, who will run, who do represent the people. And so you got to find the right people, and you got to fight for them now, because our country's at risk. I have no confidence in Barack Obama in the national defense. He wants unilateral nuclear disarmament. By the time he gets done with it, Iran will have nuclear weapons, and we won't. And your country's at risk, your family's at risk, your prosperity's at risk. When they get done with all the economic things they want to do, the middle-class standard of living will be dramatically reduced. And also, religious freedom and freedom of speech, these things are all under assault. And so, this is a time to get involved. Now, you don't have to support one party or the other across the board, but it's important to identify and run good people, or people can organize at the local level and run themselves. But in addition, if you compare, what happened as, under the Republicans as suspenders, I mean, they were little babies compared to what's going on now. The last, budget adopted by the Republican-controlled Congress had a federal deficit of $162 billion. The budget that the Democrats just adopted under Barack Obama has a deficit of $1,800 billion, or $1.8 trillion. So it was $162 billion. Now it's over 10 times as much. So those magnitudes go on over and over again. This budget increases spending over last year by 34%. Republicans,
we'll hold on to that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Peter Ferraro. And, of course, he's talking about, really, you can't back either party because both of them really certainly have real problems. But you want to find good candidates, and you want to start looking now, promoting candidates, getting people educated, and getting them ready to vote next year. Remember, of course, the primaries are not that far off. You know, certainly, the primaries will be in 2010, so it'll be next year. We'll have another Republican primary for Congress, and then we'll elect our congressman. And we need to get started moving in that direction right now. That's your message, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly my message. Get politically active, spread information on the issues, organize audiences and bring in speakers, and get that political activism going. There was a very smart left-wing activist years ago, Professor John Kenneth Galbraith from Harvard University. Big-time left-winger, wrote lots of popular books in the 50s and the 60s. He said one thing that was very smart. Everything else he said was wrong, but he said one thing that was very smart, which is when I get involved in politics, I always support the most left-wing candidate that's politically viable. And that's always a judgment, but who's the most left-winger that can win? And what conservatives need to do is find out who's the most conservative candidate, most consistent with your values, who's also viable, who has a chance to victory, and to support that person and push the system in your direction all the time. And so I think that's an effective benefit. That was an effective principle for the left to follow, and we should echo that and try to be, in addition to politically active, politically effective, so we communicate positive issues to positive messages to the public, and we promote candidates who are appealing candidates that can gain votes and advance our cause.
Well, I'll never forget in 1994 when the Republicans swept into power, and suddenly they took over for the first time in many years. The House of Representatives took over the Senate 2 years after that, made all the promises on all the things that we're going to do. They were led by Newt Gingrich at that time. And he betrayed every promise he made. So, I think that a lot of people are just sort of a little skeptical about, following the leadership of the Republican Party. They're trying to bring, in fact, the media is trying to bring Newt Gingrich back again. Oh, my goodness, what a wonderful man, what a wonderful spokesman. He says everything I believe. I don't think he believes a thing he says, but we need leaders, men of courage and integrity. And I don't see very many of them out there besides Ron Paul and a few of the people who are rallying behind him. But I think that we need to certainly have a means of getting the good congressmen and getting them onto programs like this so people would know who they are and can back them.
You know, if our people who share our views don't get involved in politics, then it's the same as if they don't exist. If they say, well, there's nobody's support, or we were disappointed. You know, the left is often disappointed, too. They've been fighting for socialized medicine since the 1930s. In 1994, they got smashed over socialized medicine. That hasn't stopped them. Now they're back again. And they're pushing the same bad ideas that have been rejected, and they're just going to keep on pushing it until it's adopted. And our side can't get too easily discouraged and can't give up on it because they didn't get what they wanted at a certain point. This is a long-term battle. It takes many years.
But, of course, the thing is that the organized medicine is behind socialized medicine. Organized pharmacy is behind the organized hospitals. They've got their people planted at the top of all of those organizations. I don't think the average doctor wants socialized medicine, but his leaders do. I don't think that certainly the people who control the hospitals want socialized medicine, but their leaders do. I've seen how they operate in organized medicine, having been part and parcel of it for a long time. People would give years of their lives to get into positions of leadership so they could betray the doctors, and the doctors had no idea what was going on. They're being betrayed by their leaders today, who've now promised $1 trillion of savings. How are they going to get it? Cutting back on what the doctors can do, cutting back on the fees to the doctors, who already are feeling that they're not making anywhere near as much money as when I first went into practice back in 1960. but nobody ever talks about that. It's always those rich doctors. These are not rich people. Most of them are eking out an existence. In fact, in many instances, the nurses are making far more than the doctors are. But you're never going to hear that from ABC, CBS, and NBC. And what are the leaders of organized medicine doing? They're saying we're going to cut the doctor's salary. What they're really going to do is basically limit access to medicine, ration health care, and, of course, stop older people from getting life-saving treatment, because, after all, they're not productive any longer. I think we're heading in a terrible direction, don't you, Peter?
I think that's all true. You know, but we faced the same problems in 1993. We were fighting Hillary Clinton on health care. All the big organized groups said the smart thing to do is get in the room and cut a deal, best deal you can for your own group. And I and other people, that was a very big cause for me at the time. I won awards for conservative groups fighting Hillary Clinton on socialized medicine. We took our case to the people. And when the people turned around...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. I guess it's Peter Ferrari. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Peter?
Yes, you are.
All right, fine. Well, this is a real issue. I hope that you're going to be involved in this. We've got to let the American people know that what they really want to do is ration access to health care. And when they say they're going to cut the cost of it, they're lying.
You know, so fighting Hillary Clinton, again, at the beginning, all those same big shots, all those big organizations, they wanted to cut a deal for their own people and let the country fall by the wayside. But I led many other people. We took our case directly to the public. And when the tide of public opinion began to turn, all those big shots turned around and they joined us. They started coming to our meetings. And that's how we beat Hillary Clinton.
Well, how can we do it this time?
This time, we're facing an even greater danger. And there's one thing that people have to understand. If I may tell the truth rather than being diplomatic, today's Democrats are not like yesterday's Democrats. You used to have conservative Democrats in Congress who were willing to take conservative positions. For many years, you had Russell Long at the Senate Finance Committee, who stopped national welfare programs, stopped guaranteed annual income, stopped socialized medicine. You don't have that anymore. Today's Democrats are very left-wing, and so it's not just a matter of, well, let's give those guys a chance. They're running amok. They're threatening to bankrupt the country, and the levels of government spending, government regulation, government control, where first they take over the auto companies, then they want to take over the banks, then they want to take over the healthcare system. What's going to be left when they get done? Are they going to turn this into old countries behind the old Iron Curtain? And I believe that if these people are not stopped, the standard of living of the average American is going to decline very sharply. You see this already with the cars. They're out to take our choice of big, powerful, luxurious cars away from us and put us all in little Fiat where you can have enough room for you and your laptop, and that's about it. That's just one example of what's going to happen across the board.
Hold that thought, Peter. We'll be back in just a moment here with Peter Ferrar. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Peter Ferrar. And, of course, Peter's pointing out that the government is in the process of taking over the automotive industry. Then the process of taking over the banking industry. They want to take over the healthcare industry. This is what they do in any fascist or communist country. And, of course, if you read the communist publications, as I do have for the last 47 years, I will tell you that they say, we are winning. Our people are in positions of power. We have an opportunity for great change. These are great times for those of us who believe, you know, in the Communist Manifesto. That's true. This is not imaginary. The threat is very real. We're moving towards a police state in America in the name of fighting that wicked terrorist, you know, Osama bin Laden, who's living over there in a cave in Pakistan. And that's why we've got to take away the freedom from the American people. And then, of course, we have to have a police state here. We've got to have satellites watching people. We've got to mark everybody's front door, you know, with a GPS localizer. We have to have cell phones so we can listen to the conversations, even if they're turned off. We certainly have to, you know, have everybody carrying an ID card. We have to have dossiers on every American citizen. We have to have the telephone company tracking every telephone call that is made. NSA has the right to listen to every telephone call, track every email and every fax through something known as Project Echelon. If you don't believe it exists, Echelon, go up on the internet. At least you can check these things out and find they're true. Peter, we're in real trouble as a nation, but before we go on, I do want you to give your website and other information out so people can get in touch with you.
Well, our organization's website is www.theacru.org, theacru.org, and there you can find many of the cases we work on, the briefs we file across the country are all posted on the website, and we have a related website, freedomtolisten.org, where we talk specifically about the fairness doctrine, and we post all kinds of documents to tell people what's going on in regard to the fairness doctrine. So those are good websites to go.
All right, fine. That's ACRU, not ACLU. Is that right?
That's right. They're the L and we're the R.
All right, fine. So we have to speak very slowly and very, very, very distinctly, or you, people just won't get it. So that's ACRU. .org, and you have a telephone number you'd like to get out.
It's theacru.org. And, well, there's contact information on the website. That's the best place to go to. The www.theacru.org.
I'm sorry. What is it before the A?
www.theacru.org.
Oh, theacru.org.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, and, fine. Well, I telephone. Go ahead. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there across America and you have something, a question or comment for Peter, he's on the front lines of this battle and has been for a long time trying to preserve our liberty. But we need to have some sort of an organized effort out there to try to block this effort to ration access to health care, because that's what it's all about. Do you honestly believe that they are going to be able to cut the cost of health care by expanding it to everybody? Of course not. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but it's just like Barack Obama, who says, I want to protect the privacy of your medical records. I believe in the privacy of your medical records. That's why we're going to put them up the internet so everybody can see them. And people sort of scratch their heads and say, how could that be? You're going to preserve our privacy by putting our records up on the internet? And but they would not say the one thing and really mean another, would they? Of course they would. That's how you confuse people and you get them to go along, because it's very difficult for people to believe that somebody would go onto television and say, I want to protect your medical records and I'm going to put them up on the internet. And the same thing is true of everything. You know, we're going to do away with the war in the Middle East. We're going to leave our troops there indefinitely in Iraq. And, of course, we're going to expand the war in Afghanistan. But we want to stop this sort of thing. We want to stop these wars. And, you know, we want to think about abortion. And that's why we want to continue. We want to think about abortion. That was the theme, you know, the talk that was given to Notre Dame and to the disservice and disgrace of the Catholic Church, the leaders of Notre Dame, the Catholic University, invited the president to go there. And little wonder, many people were there demonstrating that they felt it was wrong and immoral. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 1-800-464-8295. How are you going to be working? Are there any organizations out there that have an organized effort to try to prevent the bringing in of what I believe will be a genocidal or eugenic program? It's called socialized medicine.
Well, you know, I'm actually very interested in this issue. I've been writing about it, and this is like the sixth talk radio show I've done today on one issue or another. And I'm fighting again just like I did in 93 and 94. And now these healthcare programs, what happens in every other country is a government comes in, just like you were talking about before, they say one thing and do another. So they come in saying, oh, we're going to adopt free health care for everybody. The government's going to give you free health care for everybody. And then they find out there's no way to control costs under a system like that. So they end up creating a bureaucracy whose purpose is actually to deny people health care because they can't afford it. They can't afford to pay for it.
And I think that's what's so important. People have to understand that this is all about rationing access to health care, denying elderly people access to health care, and simply killing them. They think nothing wrong with that. There really are people who think that the elderly should not be wasting all that money that could be used for so many other good health projects and could be used to help the masses. So certainly what right do the elderly have to have it? They really intend, of course, to destroy the current Medicare system, which they know they can't afford. They've lied for years saying it's economically feasible. It is not. As of the end of last year, they have not told the American people, but Medicare started paying out more than it's taking in. Medicare is paying out more every year than it's taking in. So what do you do? Why we have to come up with a system so we can help everybody. Now, of course, ordinarily when you're paying out more than you're taking in, why you've either got to stop paying out so much money or you've got to come up with another scam. This is a scam. Basically, of course, they're supposed to be going, but then into the trust fund. But what they have not told the American people, if they've stolen all of the money out of the trust fund, there is nothing in the trust fund, is there, Peter?
No, there's not anything. The trust fund is a statement of the legal authority that Social Security has to take money from general revenue in addition to your payroll taxes. Now, there's no money to back up. It's actually a statement of the debt that the government owes to Social Security.
And so basically the cheapest thing will be just to kill off the older people and then you won't have to worry. And people say, well, they would never happen in America. Why not? We're killing people over in Iraq. We're killing people in Afghanistan. Certainly we've allowed the AIDS epidemic to spread. Over 500,000 people have died in America and countless millions throughout the world because we've never used effective public health approaches. The other countries have wanted to use and they've been threatened to silence them. I remember years ago when I was involved in this and public health officers that say, come at me as they stand, we know what you're saying is right about public health measures, but we can't back you publicly because we've been threatened, and that's the way it really works in America, ladies and gentlemen. But you're never going to hear that from Rush Limbaugh. Go right ahead.
You know, there's a new book out by Senator Tom Daschle, who Obama originally chose to run his health care initiative, but he had to quit over tax scandals. The book's called Critical, What We Can Do About the Health Care Crisis. And in there, he openly talks about health care rationing. And he talks about Great Britain and how they have this government bureaucracy. And the bureaucracy decides what health care is worth it. They decide what health care for you is worth it and what's not.
And so they will determine what's your health. You won't have any rights then at all. It'll all be decided by the bureaucracy?
That's exactly what happens in Great Britain. They have a rule there, for example, which says you talk about senior citizens. They have a rule there that says when you get macular degeneration, which causes blindness over time, they won't give you the medication that will stop it until you go blind in one eye. And then they'll spend the money on the medication to preserve your sight.
Is that the injection they're doing for macular degeneration?
That's right. You can't get that under the British health system until you go blind in one eye. Now, they don't say what happens if you go blind in both eyes at the same time.
Well, they get your cane. go ahead. Let's go ahead.
They pay for a cane, which is much cheaper.
Right.
They
right.
openly deny people treatment for cancer. Not all cancers, but some cancers. In some situations, they just say, we're not going to give you any treatment at all. Or they do it on the basis of age. They say, well, you don't have that many years to live. It's not worth it for us to spend the public's money on your health care. So they didn't say that when they were adopting socialized medicine 50 years ago in Great Britain. They said, oh, it's going to be wonderful. Everybody's health care will be paid for. But once they took over, they, now they say, you know, you got terminal cancer or you got cancer. We could save you, but it's not worth it because you're already 65 years old and we'd rather spend the money on someone who's 25. And they openly say these. They openly say this to people there in Great Britain. There's many examples too from Canada, where people come over to America in droves to buy their health care, get their health care in the United States because they can't get it in Canada. There's cases where people have cancer and get stuck on waiting lists. By the time they get to have their test, the cancer is terminal. It's too late. Of course, they do this because, once again, once they promise free health care to everybody, there's no way to control costs. So they adopt what's called health care rationing, and the government decides what health care you're going to get and when you're going to get it.
Well,
it's going to be the public interest, not your interest.
I've got to get to that book by Daschle. Do you recall the name of it?
Yes, it's called Critical, What We Can Do About the Healthcare Crisis. And he openly, if you go to spectator.org, I wrote a piece about that, which you should still be able to find. I have several pieces there on healthcare and on many of these other issues, too, the Fairness Doctrine and freedom of speech and many of these other issues. But you can find an article, and I draw all the quotes out of there, where he talks about what a great rationing system they have and how this should be a model for the United States. So this is no joke. If you don't stop this government takeover of health care, you're going to have to make arrangements to go outside the country if you get sick.
But of course,
that's what I'm planning to do.
Well, of course, the trouble is that they're going to have exchange controls very soon, so you're not going to be able to get money out of the country. So, well, you're just going to have to die. They really are people out there who talk about the necessity of killing off large numbers of people in the world. There's a Texas professor, University of Texas, who talks about killing off 90% of the population. Certainly, they were talking about the State of the World Forum in 1995. We cover that in my little brochure on planned population control, a population control agenda. Certainly, you could see the Georgia Guidestones. They talk about killing off 90% of the population. Certainly, Jacques Cousteau talked about the necessity of killing 350,000 people a day to bring the world back in balance. So why should we be surprised? Just because they're going to have to limit access to health care. After all, we're going to provide it for everybody. Why, of course, a lot of people aren't going to get it. So really,
there are environmental extremists who have precisely those views. They think that the people are bad for the economy, and bad for the environment. And so they want to actually, you're right, reduce the number of people, cut back on the population.
And for
sure. So because it's bad for the environment to have too many people.
I mean, anybody would like to see that article out of the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991. We do have that in both French and in English, where Jacques Cousteau was quoted as making that statement. Eliminate 365,000 people a day, but you'll never hear that at either conservative or liberal talk radio. Certainly, Rush Limbaugh is not going to bring that up. Well, certainly, Peter, where is that article of yours again? Or would you be able to email that to me? I'd love to see it.
I will. What is your email address?
It's Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Dr. Stan Radio at AOL.com.
Dr. Stan Radio at AOL.com. Yes, I will email to you that article, and you can see all the quotes there about Senator Tom Daschle. On the point you were just talking about some of the environmental extremists, there's another new book that's recently come out called Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Control Your Life and What You Can Do to Stop Them by Steve Malloy. You can look that up, Green Hell. You can find that on the Internet and get that book. And see, he quotes some of the people that you're talking about. And how, you know, with the new left-wing majorities controlling the federal government, these people are in the position of power. You know, when the government takes over the car companies, who do you think is going to be designing the cars for the American people? It's not going to be up to the American people anymore. It's going to be done by these environmental extremists, and they're going to assist you get the car that they want. They're going to take over the car companies, and you're not going to have the alternatives or any other alternatives they'll tax out of existence. This is another example of what they're doing. Or to show you another example I was thinking about when you were talking earlier about how saying one thing and doing another, and Barack Obama's pension for doing that. He recently said in one national discussion, I believe with the last month's press conference, he said, the last thing I want to do is take over the car companies. And this is what he says to the public. Oh, I don't want to take over the car companies. The last thing I want to do is try to run the car companies. Well, why is it that when the final details were announced of the auto bailout, the federal government is going to own 50% of General Motors? If he doesn't want to run a car company, why is he coming out owning this car company? So there's a good example of saying one thing and doing another.
Well, I think that's so true, and I think people have to understand that we are in very serious problems today, and I believe, of course, that we're going to see God's judgment on this country in the not-too-distant future. In fact, we are in the process of seeing it today. Well, I guess it's Peter Ferrara. He's certainly on the front lines of this battle. Are you back in Washington, D.C., or in that area?
I move around all the time. I do have a home in Virginia. I have another home in Pennsylvania, Son goes to college up there, and so I'm on the move a lot, and we do public speaking and lots of talk radio shows.
What is your response? Do you think that the American people are beginning to wake up to the very real threat that we face today, as the government uses the so-called threat of terrorism, which they never really tried to counter, use that threat to take away more and more of our freedom?
Well, as I was starting to say before, we're in these political cycles, and the cycle's already turning against the left-wing majority that is controlling this country. And in the next election, you'll see some new victories by people who do represent a freedom-oriented view of the world and are against the big government control. And now's the time to get involved in that wave, because I agree with you that America is in very grave danger across the board on many issues, and you don't want to be sitting around when your country is the time to preserve the future for you and your children and your grandchildren.
Well, I agree with you, Peter. We are in real trouble today, and the American people have to get involved. You can't sit on the sidelines. You can't worry because people don't want to hear what you have to say. You've got to tell them what's going on. But more than that, you've got to explain the spiritual component of what motivates these people, who really hate America. They want a one-world government. That's why, of course, we don't have tariffs, why we're shipping our manufacturing and jobs overseas. But, of course, they also hate Christianity, which was really the bulwark upon which the foundations of our nation were created. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Peter, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program with your thoughts.
Okay. Well, I mean, like you were talking before, you were talking about how they these left-wing extremists hate Christianity. That's because they really have their own religious view. To them, it's socialism is really a religion to them. They think they're going to achieve eternal salvation through the welfare state and through socialized medicine. And this is why you can't really reason with them. They reject Christianity because they have another religion, which is big government. And government power and control and their own personal power. And so this is a great struggle going on. And we thought that we had achieved great victories when the Soviet Union collapsed and communist China turned away from communism. But now we see we've got a country now in leadership where the communist Chinese are telling our president he's too left-wing. They're telling him, you guys are financially irresponsible. You need to, be more conservative. You need to be more free market. This is what the communist Chinese are telling us because they hold so many of our dollars. They don't want to see the dollar become worthless, and they're worried about it because they're more responsible than our own government today. So these are just some of the threats. I'm very worried about the unilateral disarmament, the cuts in national defense, and Barack Obama's view that America needs to get rid of its nuclear weapons. And as I said before, I mean, he's taken us to a position where Iran's going to have nuclear weapons, and we're not. The way he's going, we haven't been able to test any nuclear weapons for 20 years. Under our federal policies, we're not even sure our weapons are going to work. These are part of the threats across the board at every level. But if people need to get involved and participate now, because the great cycle is turning, and the next two elections are going to be a tremendous opportunity. Late 1970s, you had Jimmy Carter and the liberals were running Congress. They were doing many of the same things they're doing today. They trashed the country, and that's when Ronald Reagan came in. And good people need to be involved now so that when the tide turns, we'll be able to achieve lots of good things because we're involved in the process.
Well, I certainly concur with you, Peter. I appreciate everything you do, and when you have anything important, you know how to get in touch with us. I hope you will. You're always welcome here as a guest on Radio Liberty, and I've watched your career for many years. Appreciate what you've done.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
God bless, and thanks very much. Our guest has been Peter Ferraro of the American Civil Rights Union. The American Civil Rights Union, so we do hope that you'll want to get that information and help him as far as fighting the fairness doctrine, but even more important, this whole issue of socialized medicine, which is, of course, going to be the rationing of health care in the United States. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope you enjoyed our conversation with Peter Ferraro, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us, and if you're in a position to help, our number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or you can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and push the donate button and see what happens. Well, anyway, certainly if you want to really understand what's going on, certainly you can't play the liberal, conservative, right-left, Republican, Democrat game. You have to understand that there are people working behind the scenes who control both political parties, and they control the wealth of this nation, and they're doing everything they can to disarm this nation in preparation for the coming world war. Now, why would you want to disarm before you're moving into a world war? Well, this is what they're in the process of doing. They've disarmed our major missiles here. We had 100 major missiles, each one with 3 massive warheads on it, and we've simply disbanded those. And we're doing everything we can to transfer our military technology and our wealth and our manufacturing to communist China. So we would even have difficulty manufacturing sophisticated missiles at the present time, because we're getting most of our things from Red China, most of our medicines coming from Red China. Almost all of the vitamin C that you're going to be able to buy today comes from Red China. They're manufacturing everything over there, as has been an organized, orchestrated effort to transfer America's manufacturing and American jobs and America's wealth to other countries. It's all part of the Earth Charter. You can pull it down off the internet, or we'd be glad to send it to you. This is the Mein Kampf for what's going on today, that and the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which you can find summarized in our Sustainable Development Syllabus and Agenda 21, of which, of course, you can get from the United Nations, or you can get the Santa Cruz Plan from us. It was prepared here based upon the worldwide plan for Agenda 21. Over in Germany, they've got communities where nobody has a car. Everybody simply gets around on mass transit. That's why when they build their sustainable buildings, sustainable homes, why they're all on rail lines, because they want to get us out of our cars. There's a master plan. And, of course, they really want to get away and do away with a large part of the population. If you doubt that, you need to get my talk on planned population reduction, my talk on population control, and my talk, None Dare Call It Genocide. All three of them available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you want to get our Sustainable Development Syllabus. You'd want to get our Sustainable Development 4-tape set or a DVD on sustainable development. There really is a master plan. It's being followed. And if you get any of those items, you ask for a copy of my Population Control Agenda. Is one of the best things out there. You can get it, pull it down for nothing on the internet, or certainly if you will send it to you free of charge if you get into the other items that we have or the Earth Charter. Understand that we have people who have a different agenda. Now, who are they? Well, you need to get our membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. It's a big syllabus, but it goes into who is in the Trilateral Commission, who is in the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Group of 30. And what are these organizations really about? Well, they're really about control, a small group of wealthy people who believe that they have the right to rule And this is what communism is really about. It's not about sharing the wealth. It's about centralizing power with the hands of a small ruling elite. That's what they have in China. That's what they still have in Russia today. They say it's no longer communist because it's run by the oligarchs. And who are the oligarchs? Why, they're the members of the KGB who took off their overcoats and put on regular suits. But they work in concert with the people who rule this country, and they always have. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to see how it all fits together. Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street, and